The Rose Bowl Legacy Foundation preserves, protects, and enhances the future of the Rose Bowl Stadium as a National Historic Landmark. America's Stadium has hosted two Olympic Games, with a third one coming in 2028, two World Cup Finals, five Super Bowls, and the granddaddy of them all, the Rose Bowl, since 1923. It is the epic center of college football and is the most iconic stadium in the world. To learn more about how you can support the Rose Bowl Stadium as it turns 100 years young, visit www.inspire, which spells inspire, 2022.org.
Hey Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Wednesday. We're going to talk with the coach, Coach Harvey Hyde, here today on the Peristyle Podcast. Normally talk on Mondays. It was a holiday weekend. Hope you guys enjoyed your holiday. We had a show with Dan Weber on Tuesday and Keely Yore. And today we're going to welcome the coach back on the show, talking everything USC football. We got some announcements from the Pac-12, and USC Athletic Director Mike Bone made a statement as well. So looks like we're inching closer to opening up college football, which would be great. We would love that. So we're going to talk all about that, answer your questions. If you have any questions or comments for us here on the show, best way to do, you can email us, podcast@uscfootball.com. That's the best way to get a hold of us. You could also call or text us, too, if you want to hear your voice on the podcast, or just send us a text if that's easier for you. 424-254-9141 is the number. Like I said, call, leave a voicemail, try to keep it brief, or just send us a text message, and we can get it that way. Also, please, if you're a subscriber on Apple Podcasts or if you have an Apple device, go to the Apple Podcasting app, leave us a five-star rating, positive review. Those are always great. And if you want to ask a question there, we'll make sure it goes right to the top of the show. So please help. That really helps us grow the show. We've been doing this as going into our 13th, what we hope is going to be the 13th football season. And getting those Apple Podcast reviews up there is really helpful. So I appreciate that. But subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast. And we do appreciate you listening every week. And we do appreciate the coach coming on with us every week. He's on the line right now. Follow him on Twitter at Coach Harvey Hyde, or his website is harveyhyde.com. Coach, how are you?
I am great, buddy. We had a day off on Monday, so we're doing it Wednesday, but we jump back and forth, whatever fits our schedule. But I'm looking forward to it. We've got a lot to talk about, and of course, we want to thank everyone out there that sends in the questions, and you're part of this podcast. And Ryan, you just said it. It looks like we're inching a little bit closer to a football season. We all hope.
We all hope, and we are. We're inching there. So the NCAA started the ball rolling, I guess, when they said that universities, and I think it started with football and basketball, that universities could allow in-person, voluntary, on-campus workouts for members of the student athletes. The NCAA said that could start on June 1st. Then yesterday, so today's Wednesday, Tuesday, the Pac-12 CEO group met in the morning. And then later on in the day, they came out with their own statement saying that Pac-12 schools would be allowed to have those in-person, on-campus athletic workouts, voluntary workouts, to start on June 15th. So that's the earliest it could start. It's going to be up to the individual campuses, and they have to be, it has to be permissible by whatever the governmental entities are for wherever that university is located. And I'll read you what Larry Scott said in the statement. He said, the Pac-12 is committed to the well-being of our student-athletes, and the decision to allow for voluntary workouts subject to determination by each school is guided by the advice of our medical experts and will be supported by the detailed protocols established by our medical advisory committee in context with our campus's own safety guidelines. That's a mouthful. So he says, as states have either already opened or began to open up access to parks, gyms, and other training facilities, student athletes should have that option at this time to be in what for many will be a much safer environment on campus where they can have access to the best available health, well-being, and training support. And then USC's Mike Bone had a statement that really didn't add any kind of details, just mentioning that the NCAA ruling and then also the Pac-12's ruling, that they're working, really hard to figure out what's going to be safe for everyone. It's a rapidly evolving situation, and they want to move forward responsibly with the utmost care, stuff like that. So they have a project called Project Restart, and they are really are working towards getting that forward. So no real timetable for USC saying, hey, we're going to start June 15th. But the door's opened up now, Coach, for all of that to happen, and we'll see where it goes. But what were your overall thoughts on the latest news coming out of the NCAA, the Pac-12, and USC?
Well, we were all hoping this would happen. To be completely honest with you, Ryan, I'm surprised it did happen this soon. I really am. They've obviously done their homework, and they feel that it's safe and so on to do this. But, we were probably all thinking the worst, all of us, maybe not having a football season. And we hope they still do have a football season and maybe moving the season to the spring or October, November, whatever. But with this type of indication that they're willing to do these things, that means they've done their homework and they have a plan on how they're going to allow this to all come about. And I think USC will jump aboard as the other schools will, because it's, I think, the best interest of the athlete as far as being able to have the proper nutrition, the proper training, be around the trainers or anything as far as if they need or they don't feel well, the whole thing. I just think it brings a lot to every football program as far as in the Pac-12, and I'm really excited about it because I really didn't anticipate this happening so quickly, and it's happening. So I know they wouldn't do this unless they had a plan, so I'm excited about it.
No, I'm excited about it as well, and I know there were we just didn't know. There were some people that were saying there's no way things are going to be played, and then there's other people saying there has to be played. And I just felt like you needed to kind of wait things out. But if you look at the tea leaves, if you the writing on the wall, we did see some politicians making these long declarations like nothing's going to happen until next year. And the LA County supervisor, I think it was misquoted apparently by the LA Times, but the talk was closing down for another 3 months after the first 2 months were over. And I feel like people just kind of had enough of it. And they're like, look, people want to be safe, but you can't just keep doing this. You got to do something to start opening things up. And so I feel like that's the direction we're going now. Could something weird happen and everything gets shut down again? I guess that's a possibility, but it seems like they're at least from the states that have opened up so far, Coach, I'm not seeing anything where it's just blown up in their face and everything's got to be shut down again. So I'm a little bit more optimistic than I was before. I feel like I've been a little bit more optimistic every week, but these are actual declarations, decisions that have been made by the governing bodies that are putting things back into the university's control, saying, hey, you can open up if you want to open up. And I think once you start seeing some universities open up, most of them will. Now, is there going to be a few that don't? Maybe. And then maybe they don't have a choice because they'll be in a state that the government's not going to let them open up for whatever reason. So I'm curious to see how this plays out. But as a collective, it looks like college football is moving forward, and we're going to see an attempt at the college football season. I was under the impression too, like, yeah, maybe they'll delay it. It seems like that's off the table. Like, they don't want to delay it if they don't have to. They want to get things started, and they're laying the groundwork for all that to happen this fall.
And I agree, Ryan, with what you're saying, and I think there'll be more control and more caution when the athletes are with people that have put them in a very protective type of situation. And rather than be somewhere maybe where they can make contact, work out in a gym, or be somewhere with people who have not been tested or will not be tested or whatever the case might be, I think this is the best thing to do. I know a lot of people say, I'd rather have my family with me than out there wondering what they're doing. Well, this is a way of saying that. Your family's here. We know what we're doing. and we know exactly what we need to do. And I think that's a good way of going about doing it. As long as people follow, not only just the players and athletes, but as long as everybody else out there in our communities are following the same type of guidelines, we're going to win this game. People call it a war. I don't call it a war. I think it's something that we have to be challenged with to want to be, win. And if you don't want to win, you're going to do some stupid things, and that's going to enhance us all as far as our safety. So, you know, for all of you out there that are listening, follow what the people tell us to do. I mean, I don't tell a doctor what to do when he's going to do surgery on me, and I don't know if he could tell me how to call a football game. But I think that it's important to follow the people that are professionals and don't defy them because, I want to do what I want to do and it's my privilege and I'll take the consequences and all that. Yeah, you can. You can go play on the freeway too if you want. but you know, that's something that you choose not to do because of the danger. So consider everyone. And I think this is the best way to consider the players, making sure that you have them all at home. And you know what's going on.
Yeah, there's, I mean, it gets frustrating. I hate the extremes really kind of bother me when the people that are just like, no one should ever leave the house for another year. And then the other people that are like, I don't care about anything. I'm just going to go outside and do whatever I want. It's like, there's got to be a reasonable, you know, middle ground there. And I think the majority of people are, but there are definitely people on the outside and the extremes and it's tough. I don't think if you say the only way we can beat this is nobody leaves their house for a year, it's like, okay, that's just not realistic. I mean, how many people are going to be suffering because of all the other reasons outside of the virus? But you can't go out there and just spread the virus around like it doesn't exist either. So I feel like everyone had to feel this out. You had to find that sort of middle ground. What's going to be safe for everyone? What's got the best chance of working? And what is going to be the reaction if something does pop up? Like, what if one player gets it? Okay, is the whole team out? Or does it take 10 players on the team to have it, to have the whole team be, you know, to be out? And what does happen? Like, what if you're in the middle of a season, you're in the Pac-12, say that everything starts as normal and you're in the Pac-12, and for whatever reason, Arizona State, like, the whole dang team gets sick. And Herm Edwards, who's an older coach, he gets sick and he's in the hospital. And, like, they basically have to shut it down. Like, what happens? What if the rest of the conference is okay? The rest of the country is okay? We might lose teams or you know, along the way, or you might lose a decent amount of players for a team along the way. So it's so much that is still unknown right now, Coach. But I'm very happy that they're at least moving in the right direction, knowing that if something horrible was, you know, happening or pending to happen, That doesn't mean, well, we already started this ball rolling, we're going to have the college football season. It might all get shut down at some point, but I just feel much more optimistic now that you're going about this like a systematic approach, trying to do the right thing and allowing for the best opportunity for the sport to happen in the fall.
I agree with you. And let's be positive about this and hope it all works out. And, you know, maybe there won't be the same type of season as far as a lot of people in the stands and so on. But I think it's got a good chance of having football, and I think we all got to enjoy, if we have football, enjoy what we're able to get. And the kids want to play football. The coaches want to coach football. We want to watch football. So if we all work together, we'll have this opportunity.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think working together is important in all of this. And I like the fact that all the athletic directors have worked together with Larry Scott here in the Pac-12, all of the conference commissioners have been communicating. There's a lot of communication going on. Now, is there a driving force behind it that's not really about camaraderie? It's more about that all these universities have a lot to lose if they, you know, the athletic departments won't exist without college football. So that, I guess that would be the one worry, Coach, is if really it's not going to be safe, but it's just so much money that they have no choice but to do it. I don't think that's the case, but I guess that if you're going to be cynical about it, that's what you would say.
I would say, and I've said all along, there's going to be a football season because of the financial responsibility of what football brings to the athletic department. And if you don't have a football season, there isn't much that can be done as far as the other sports or salaries or scholarships or anything. So it's when you have it. And if you're safe, when you start and you have a plan, you can have a football season. But you got to be able to make sure that everything goes the way towards the football season as they're planning. And when they have it, they have it. It just, I feel good, and I'm very surprised it's starting already. And I think that's a positive thing.
Yeah, it's. I think I'm agreeing with you. I was a little surprised that it's going as fast as it has. I thought the Pac-12 might be a little behind the rest. Now, you know, starting June 15th as opposed to June 1st, whatever. I think there's just there's drop dead dates where you have to have things going by the middle of July. You know, you want that 6 weeks thing before you know, the end of August, beginning of September. And allowing for these on-campus workouts, if all the Pac-12 ends up having those workouts start by the end of June at some point, and you've got a couple weeks to sort of kind of get ready for what could be like a six-week training camp modified in some way, I think you're great. You know, there's a chance for everyone to be on the same page. I don't think that's going to be something that complete equity is not going to happen. There's no equity in college football anyway, but that's going to be very difficult, I think, to achieve. With, you know, there's going to be there's programs that had a whole bunch of spring football. There's programs that didn't have any. You know, that's just the way it is. So some teams are going to have extra more practice than others, and maybe the, you know, the SEC or the Big Ten or someone opens up earlier than the Pac-12, so you get an extra week or two of preparation or something like that. All that stuff could happen too. But I just think the important thing is to get it into the season and get things rolling. And I think you learn a lot. Like, we're going to be under a different kind of stress, just different kind of, you know, scenarios that you have to exist in here in college football. And I think we'll know more by the end. And if, you know, if there's still things going on and there's still issue, you know, cause for concern in 2021, I think you know how to handle it a lot better. So, and we'll see in college football, we get to watch what the Bundesliga, you know, what the German soccer league is doing now, or South Korean baseball, or what the UFC is doing. Now, all those are different, but the NFL won't be. And the NFL is going to be a lot more similar to college football. And we get to see what they do. And the NBA and Major League Baseball, they're struggling trying to figure out something. So there's just so much we don't know yet. But I guess I'm encouraged because of the steps we've taken.
You know, I think a lot is made about when they start and will they be in shape. Athletes are always in shape. They work out year-round. They don't have to be watched by everybody. These guys know what it takes to be ready to play. They're very competitive. And if another league starts a week before them, so what? I mean, you can catch up. You can do what you got to do. You got to get ready for – you got to get your team ready to play. And I think that these coaches know, and the athletes have been around, and they're communicating with them. These guys are ready to play. And I've always said sometimes kids get too much football. You're around football too much, throwing the football all summer, seeing the same faces. I've said let them go home. Let them do something different. So there'll be more energy for football. They'll come back wanting to play football more, wanting to see their friends more. We miss football. It's the whole same thing. So a lot of negatives turn into a positive, and that's exactly what I'd be selling if I was coaching as far as a football team. Welcome home. Let's get after it. We've all been gone for a while. We're hungry for football. We're hungry to work out. Let's get ready to play. And that's the approach I would take, and because I've always felt that the kids get too much football, and they never have a time to really be a regular person.
Yeah,
and you can still be a regular person and a football player and have the responsibility of getting yourself ready for camp. And that's why I look at it.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, because I think there's like everyone talks about the new normal and what is going to be the new normal? What changes? There might be some changes where do you need as much football in the offseason? Now, personally, I like all the football in the offseason. We get to cover all of that. So for me, it's much better for my job that we have a lot of football in the offseason. But you might back off some of that stuff. I mean, just in everyday life, like there, I think things are going to change. Like we might not ever shake hands with random people for years from now. Who knows? I mean, but little things can change. But you're right, Coach. Maybe that's a change that goes forward. Like, you know what? We don't really need these winter workouts. We don't really need all these 7-on-7 tournaments or whatever. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but you might see something like that happen because of the impact that this has, you know, this offseason has for on everyone, high school football, college football, and the NFL.
I agree with you. And football is going to be just as exciting. You're not going to see anything different. They're going to get out there and play hard because they want to win, whether there's a huge crowd or a little crowd or with no crowd. So, you know, a lot of those things people make a big to-do about. And I think sometimes they overplay all these camps and the summers these kids go to. And they never have any off time. They never get ready for the season and the all-star games they play in and all of the above. So I really think it'll all balance out, and these kids that come back, they miss football, they're ready to go, their muscles are rested, and, you know, it's good to see everybody. So it's not just for one team doing this. Everybody's doing this.
Yeah.
So let's just look at it as a positive thing, and we're going to love football. You're not going to see any difference in the game. So, you know, there's nothing to talk about. Let's just get ready to play.
All right. Well, why don't we take a quick break, and we'll come right back and answer some questions.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
All right, we're back here on the Peristyle Podcast. We want to get some questions. We don't have too many this week. A couple of different topics. We had two people write in about Keaton Slovis. I think we were talking about some of his stats before, but our buddy Curtis says, "Hey, Ryan, I'm sorry for comparing Keaton Slovis to Sam Darnold's statistics. I love Sam Darnold. I would never pick one quarterback over the other. I should have just said that Slovis was the best USC freshman quarterback in the history of the program statistically, no matter what different offense USC has run for all those years. My apologies to the Peristyle, Curtis from Moreno Valley." And yeah, I think it might have been for the Dan Weber podcast. Curtis had written about that. And to me, Keaton Slovis had a much better system to work with. But statistically, you're right, Curtis. He just blew everyone else away. You know, four different games going over for 400 yards. Crazy. But at this point, I'm still taking Sam Darnold. His stats weren't going to be as good. He was running the gumbo offense. But, you know, he's in the NFL now, starting for the New York Jets. Keaton Slovis might get there, but at this point, you know, 1 year of Slovis and what I've seen from Darnold the last, you know, 5 years, I'm going to take Darnold. But any thoughts on that, Coach?
Yeah, what did you call the offense? What did you call it, gumbo?
Gumbo. That's what I think T. Martin said that to Dan Weber because it's like a little bit of everything, and that was my biggest problem with it, is just no one owned it. There wasn't, you know, people blamed T. Martin because he was the offensive coordinator. It wasn't his offense. It was like a little bit of Tyson Helton and Clay Helton and Brian Ellis and T. Martin. And it just was like this hodgepodge offense where now you have one dude that runs it. It's Graham Harrell. He comes in and runs the offense. Just even if it wasn't like on paper a better offense than what USC ran before, because it was just a one singular voice, I think it's going to just work better. And I think it's a better offense anyway, but it's definitely worked better.
Do you remember when I used to call it 31 flavors?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that's exactly what I called it. And I wondered when you got that term too. Now I understand it. So now we can continue.
Yeah. Well, I think also a lot of it was left over Lane Kiffin and Steve Sarkisian stuff. So there was like, yeah. So 31 flavors is a great way to describe it.
All right. Curtis, thank you for checking with us, and you never have to apologize for anything you do. Okay, buddy, we just like you here in the huddle with us.
We do like Curtis in the huddle. We have a voicemail actually coming up from a little bit too, but Don wrote in, and I think this is the opposite view. He said, fake news. when considering, well, he was talking about Shotgun in this, Shotgun was talking about, but he said, when considering Keaton Slovis's stats, how much of those are due to very talented receivers and a game plan to promote quarterback stats? First quarters are good, then Keaton throws interceptions and fumbles. I think Keaton is fool's gold. Great stats, but not many big important plays throws. Don, I would disagree with you, Don, on this one. I mean, he started off turning the ball over a lot more earlier in the year than he did later in the year, which makes sense for a true freshman. I don't think it's an offense to generate quarterback stats either. I think it's an offense to efficiently move the ball. And he's been, you know, really good at doing that. So I think you're taking too much away from Keaton Slovis, Don. But what do you think, Coach?
Well, it's definitely an offense that features the quarterback. You can't say anything but that. It definitely is around talented receivers. And if a guy catches a pass for 1 yard and runs 15 yards, he gets the stats for it. So, you know, he's going to get a lot of stats when you have talented receivers and you throw the ball as much as they throw the ball. So it all starts with the quarterback in this offense. And obviously the quarterback's going to get a lot of stats. Now, I think he's a talented kid and he throws the ball well, but when you have great players surrounding you, it gives you a lot of options. So in this offense, it's basically a pass type of offense with great receivers, and it doesn't always have the deep passing game. It has the short game, the middle game. It has all the different games that you play, and the quarterback is basically the guy that touches the ball every single play, and he gets the stats for every single play unless it's a running play. So obviously he's going to have higher stats than anybody else because that's what it's all centered around.
Yeah, I mean, USC's always had really good receivers, though. Like, I mean, when you have, you know, Marquise Lee, Robert Woods to Marquise Lee to, you know, Nelson Aguilar to Juju Smith-Schuster, like, you were having these duos of NFL receivers on every football team out there. And USC had some good numbers, but nothing that looked like this. This is, to me, just a much better offensive system. And the fact that a true freshman can run it as good as he has, that's just rare. You know, he's just, you know, I think JT Daniels is a really talented quarterback. He looked pretty mediocre in the gumbo offense the year before. And I think Keaton Slovis would have too, to be fair. So I think a lot of it, I don't want to take away from Keaton Slovis, but he's run this system really well. I think JT Daniels would have run it well. It's friendly to the quarterback. I don't think it's not something that you're just trying to get quarterback stats. You're going to, like Coach said, you're going to get quarterback stats, but I don't think that's a gimmick offense that all you want to do is like inflate quarterback numbers. I think you saw some of the Texas Tech stuff and they really do want to run the ball more in this offense. And I feel like they didn't really get that opportunity when you had all the injuries last year, having three running backs down at one time, plus, you know, your starting quarterback. That's why I'm curious about this year, what it's going to look like. Will it be more balanced? How Slovis is going to look second year in the system? Still got a lot of talented receivers. They could put up a lot of points and a lot of yards. So I don't know, but we'll see. I just want college football to happen so bad, Coach. So we need to get back, and all these things we talk about could happen. We want to see if they will happen.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And, you know, I keep going back to that same point. To be a great offensive football team, you still got to run the football. And you hear me talk about that all the time. It brings toughness to your team. Makes your defense tougher, too, because they have to practice against it. It's not just a throw pass rush type of defense as far as the defensive side of the football and pass block on the offensive side of the football. I think you have to learn to do both very well to be a great football team. Otherwise, we'd see everybody in the country doing the same thing because they are the great quarterbacks in the country. So this does feature the quarterback. It is a passing offense. I'm glad that no one called it I hate that name called the air raid offense. I like it to be USC's offense, and I think you've got to be able to feature his steps, Malapai, and the toughness that they bring, and the great Carr, the way he had that great junior year. And I mean, you've got to feature these guys. They got to be part of the offense, and your offense got to understand that it is part of the offense, not just something you do once in a while. I'm not big on stats. I'm big on winning, okay? I'm big on the scoreboard. I'm not big on what the stats are. I want to know what the score is. And I think that's what you have to look at as far as how good of a football team you really are.
Yeah. All right, well, the next couple questions are sort of linked together as well, and they have to do with UCLA. So UCLA, Dan Guerrero, announced the retirement last year, I believe it was, and UCLA ended up hiring Martin Jarman from Boston College. He was there for 3 years. I think he was the youngest athletic director in the country when he got hired, but he was also at Ohio State for about 8 years, I believe. So there's some concern here, Coach, with the Ohio State ties and UCLA's new athletic director. So I'll read you the first question. So it's looking more and more like the college football season will go forward in the fall. Great development. I'm pleased with the way athletic director Mike Bone is running things, and he definitely shows what a competent and qualified athletic director looks like and leads. I'm also looking forward to seeing the football team under Coach Helton's new staff and philosophy, and I believe they will be greatly improved. However, you knew there was a however coming. I woke up the other night in a cold sweat. Oh, boy. After dreaming about this nightmare scenario for USC. Let's say Clay Helton and the team meet whatever metric Bone has set for them in order for Helton to retain his job. Win the Pac-12 South, win the Pac-12, a certain win-loss record, whatever it is. But across town, Chip Kelly and the team bomb out again, and the new UCLA AD decides to make a change. In my nightmare, since the new UCLA athletic director was an assistant AD at Ohio State, he makes a quick call to Urban Meyer and hires him. At this point in my dream, I see the mushroom cloud of nuclear explosion going off in the collective USC fan base and wake up screaming. Even if USC won the Pac-12 and made the college football playoff, if Meyer ended up at UCLA, there would be vocal USC fans losing their collective minds and calling for Bone's head. Am I overreacting? Should I begin stocking up on antidepressant meds? Do you think this could happen? Fight on, John in Oakland.
Well, John, go take a shower. Everything's going to be all right. I don't think UCLA cares that much about football as far as their hiring and the way they feel. Otherwise, they might have made some moves already. Their athletic director was interviewed by a committee that basically was not athletic, was basically academic. Nothing against Martin. I think he's a good young man, got a great opportunity. I think Mike Bone had more West Coast ties, and by being at San Diego State and being in this part of the world, gave him a great advanced knowledge of what's happening in the Pac-12. Martin probably knows a lot of people in the Pac-12, but doesn't know West Coast, doesn't know what it's like to compete in cities where you have 10 teams that want your money, a little bit different than what it was at Boston College or Columbus, Ohio, or East Lansing, Michigan. I know he's known as a fundraiser, and I think that had a lot to do with his hiring. But it's a lot easier to fundraise at Ohio State when there's one university that really everybody rallies around. And the same thing at Michigan State, there's Michigan. But you have that type of alumni. In Boston College, a 40,000-seat stadium, he'll be surprised when he goes to the Rose Bowl and sees maybe 30,000, 35,000 people there instead of if we have football and if you can do that on a normal football year. When you think you'll have 65, 70,000 people, I haven't seen that happen. And I think he's got a lot to learn as far as the West Coast, competing in the West Coast. He's young. He's enthusiastic. But the West Coast is different than the East Coast or Columbus or East Lansing or Boston. You can't go farther east than Boston. And it's going to be, a struggle for him, especially. Why hasn't UCLA made it more of an important part of their athletic program? They win in their Olympic sports and so on. They're trying to turn it around. But I think he's going to have a tough time. They're $35 million in debt, so he's going to have to find a way to come out of debt. And how's he going to do that? So I think he's got a lot of things that he's going to have to learn how to manage. And he's not going to be out here, I don't think, until, I don't know when, July 1st or whatever. Doesn't give him a lot of time. I know he's working on it, but I think he's got a tough job. And I think there may have been people with more UCLA ties that have played at UCLA, been a part of the Pac-12, that possibly could have fit in to the UCLA program a little bit better than Martin. But Martin's a good kid, great opportunity for him. They were not afraid to pay him, gave him a 6-year contract. $1.2 million, $300,000 up front to put a down payment on a house. So good luck to Martin and the Bruins. But you asked the question, and I answered it.
All right. Well, you sort of avoided the Urban Meyer part, but that's okay because we got Jim B., who also had a question along the same lines. So a lot of fans are thinking this way, Coach. You said, hey, guys, you're doing a great job. Keep up the good work. There seems to be a certain crowd at USC who doesn't want to hire Urban Meyer, I guess, for political reasons. If SC doesn't hire him, why wouldn't he go to UCLA and that job will be open soon? He would have the same access to the rich gold mine of recruiting market here in SoCal at UCLA as he would at USC. If they got him, would not UCLA go to the top of the recruiting team rankings right away? With that kind of talent, would they not start challenging for the national championships every year and even win it a few times? And what about the other schools in the Pac-12 who are so near SoCal and have access to that rich SoCal talent market? Are we going to make the same mistake that we made when Pat Hayden was in there? Fight on from Jim B.
Well, you know, I was an advocate of hiring Urban Meyer. You know, nothing against Clay Helton, but that was their decision. But he was available, and if they could have gotten him, it was a no-brainer. Okay, it's a no-brainer at USC. UCLA, I don't know if they have the money to get Urban Meyer, or if they want Urban Meyer, or if they can recruit to UCLA like they could USC. They have a different philosophy there, and sure, they get to play in the Rose Bowl, and they've got all of this and that, but I don't think Urban Meyer would be interested in UCLA. I really don't. He may be, but if he wanted to get back into coaching, I think there's more lucrative and better coaching positions than UCLA. And I'm sorry if you're a Bruin fan out there that I'm saying that, but I really do believe that. The Trojans would interest any coach in the country, okay? A great tradition. They know exactly what you can do there. You can see what's going on there right now. It's a whole different situation, okay? So that's my feeling. I know if I'm a football coach and I have a choice between UCLA and USC, where am I going? Going to USC. The great tradition, the alumni, and everything else. UCLA has a great alumni. I'm a part of the Rose Bowl. I know what's going on. But it's a different vibe. And you got to have a vibe and a feeling of how important it is and everything else. And I just don't get the feeling it's that important at UCLA.
Yeah, I agree with you, Coach. I think that, you know, I get why UCLA fans would, I mean, USC fans would be a little worried. I agree with you. I think it would have been a perfect hire at USC. Still could down the road at some point if it comes to that. I don't know as much about the new situation at UCLA. I have a hard time picturing that happening only because, well, I mean, there's a bunch of reasons, but one, the hire that UCLA just made, the one a couple of years ago with Chip Kelly, was an outside of the box hire. They were hiring more like what USC would do. Like, you're the familiar, like, just not really stretch. They're not really going out of their way to get the best candidate. They're not going out to hire the guy that an SEC school would have hired. When they hired Chip Kelly, Florida wanted him. All those schools wanted him. I think Auburn wanted to replace, you know, and bring him in. He was a hot name. He was the one, and they won the sweepstakes for him. And they got booster money to pay for it and all this stuff. They made it work. And you got to give them credit for doing that, which is not something UCLA typically did. Well, that's blown up in their face. He's been terrible. He's not recruiting. They haven't won an out-of-conference game yet, and it's probably going to be another struggle bus year. So are you really going to do that again and go out and, like, go out of your comfort zone and not get the results? Now, it's a new athletic director, so maybe they would, but I don't know if they're going to have the support all, you know, across the board. It's not just the athletic director making the call. You have to have across-the-board support to bring in someone like Urban Meyer, and you might get pressure from the UC Regents, all that stuff. Like, there might be a lot of pressure to not bring in someone like that, but to have him follow like a Chip Kelly that you went out on a limb for, and it obviously, if you're hiring Urban Meyer, the Chip Kelly thing blew up in your face, didn't work because he wouldn't have had a successful third year either. I think that's going to make it more difficult. I don't know if you agree, Coach, but them overreaching in the last coaching search might make it so they're not going to do that again in this search.
I agree 100%. First of all, they got to figure out a way to get $35 million during the red. No. And you got to pay him, what, $10 million a year, $8 million a year? He's not going to work for less than that. And where are you going to get your attendance? Well, you'll sell a lot of tickets if you hired him. But what kind of money are you going to make this year in the athletic department? They're going to be further in debt. So, you know, if you're a football coach, you want to go where there's abundance, where you have a Learjet at your leisure time at any time. You can recruit nationally and bring kids on Campus, you know, he's not in a position where he wants to fail. He wants to win, and he wants to win in a hurry. Can you win in a hurry at UCLA? I don't know. Are the cupboards bare? Do they really want football at UCLA? I think they want football at UCLA, but are they willing to sacrifice for football at UCLA? I think UCLA is a great university, a great campus, and they've proven in the past that you can win there. The Terry Donahue era and all those great areas, Toledo area and all of that, great eras. Go back to, you know, I can name all those coaches. But that hasn't been there lately, and it hasn't shown us that it's been there lately. And I haven't seen the desire of it wanting to be there lately. So, you know, when I look at these things, I sort of wonder, that's a sleeping program. You never read about it. You never hear about it. You never, you know, you don't even know it's in town in Southern California. And I'm going to tell you, in Southern California, it's a different game now with SoFi and all the great teams that are in Southern California and more teams coming. And it's a competitive type of thing. So, you know, they've sort of gone to sleep there, and it's going to take them a while to wake up, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too. I don't think you can wake up from the Chip Kelly nightmare and hire Urban Meyer. But though, if you want to get the, you want to dig out of the hole as fast as you possibly can, that's the way you'd want to do it. But I'm not sure that's going to happen.
They're not willing to sacrifice.
Yeah.
They're not really to sacrifice for an Urban Meyer coming in and listening to his demands.
Because you do, you have to make sacrifices. And that was a big problem for USC is like people didn't want to give control over. They wanted to have control over everything that was going on. And if you hire a powerful coach, you're exactly doing that. You're handing over control. Now, how do you win? You have a powerful coach in there. And, you know, that doesn't allow, like, it doesn't allow the powers that be to have the control that they would want, like they do right now. So, I don't know. We'll move on from that. We got one last one from our buddy Curtis. I'll play it for you, Coach.
Hi, this question is for the coach. Coach Helton's tendencies is what I want to talk about. He likes to platoon. I think that will work with our receivers and running backs. I expect our running backs to go one running back per series and rotate it that way. But I don't know about the rest of the positions. Defense either, because Todd Orlando doesn't like to platoon his line and linebackers. So what does the coach think about that? And fourth down decisions. Have you noticed if Clay Helton, what does he do on fourth down? Does he like to go for it? Does he like to kick? What does he do? And how could he improve on the end game decisions for this year? Curtis from Moreno Valley.
Well, Curtis, first of all, I want the best tailback or the best running back on the field. I'm not a big guy in rotation. I'm a big guy in having my best player that does what I want done on the football field as far as a pass blocker, as far as a rusher, as far as a receiver, the whole package. And if there is one that's better than the other, I want him on the field, just like Utah's tailback and other tailbacks and the great tailbacks that have been at Stanford and with the, you know, McCaffrey and all of those guys. I want them on the field. I don't want to alternate those guys. I want them on the field. Now, if they're all equal, I want to find out who the best guy is. I don't want it to be, he's down his personnel. I got to play this guy because he feels bad. You know, when you get your chance, you get out there and play. That's my philosophy. Now, if they're all equal, then yeah, I'll let them play a little bit. But you get used to a guy. You get used to a game. You get a feel in a game where you ran a play or you blocked a guy and you missed a block. Well, the next time you know how he plays, you're able to settle up better or find him in the blitz package or whatever they're doing. And you get a feel. You've seen things three or four times in a row or three or four series in a row where you're able to get the feel of the game better and the way you pass block, the way you run a hole, and how you cut back a guy you said he over-pursued it and I didn't take advantage of it the last time we ran this play. So I'm big in giving the best guy the opportunity to play as much as he can play because he gets a feel in the game. He gets a feel of what's happening, the rhythm on offense, the rhythm of the offensive line blocking, how they block and how they're setting up blocks and how I can set up next time to block for the line or whoever, the secondary defensive or offensive end blocking a secondary guy. So that's how I feel on the running back. And I'm not big on rotating the offensive line either because they work together as a team. Receivers, you know, I want my best receivers on the field all the time, working together, timing, talking on the sideline. The next time we go out there, I know I can beat this guy on the corner. Let's set it up. And knowing that that guy is going to be in there on the next series, so we just talked about it. Let's do it. If you're rotating him all the time, he might not be in the game for the next two or three series, and the next guy doesn't know what he can do. He's just starting to feel on that defensive back or what he thinks he can do to him or what zones he can break or whatever. So I'm for playing the same guys, and when guys get the opportunity to get in the game, then it's your turn to make it happen by an injury or whatever, or resting somebody on a big play or whatever. On the defensive side, I don't like to make changes there either, unless we're getting tired or we're on the field too long, because you've been able to recognize an offense or a set or that how deep the tailback is, and you notice when the tailback's at a certain depth, what's happening, or you look at his eyes, he looks a certain way, and you know when he looks a certain way, what's going to happen. So, you know, I'm for playing the same guys. They know how to rush guys. They say, I can beat this guy to the inside. Last time I didn't beat him, but I can fake the outside and go inside. There's different things you get as far as the feel of the game. It's hard to, unless you played the game a lot, and Curtis, I'm anticipating, I know you played the game. You know how you get into the game, and you know what's going on, and you know the pursuit angles. You know how fast the guy is, so you know what angle to take on him when you're pursuing. You learn that, and remember, he cut back on you the last time, so you're not going to let that happen again. And you get a feel of how to tackle him because how strong he is and so on. So there's so many different feels you get by playing the game and getting into the rhythm. So I'm not a big guy on a lot of rotations.
What about the end game stuff, Coach? Do you feel like Clay Helton's more of a go for it on fourth down guy? What, you know, go for the tie, go for the win kind of thing? What about some of the end game and critical down stuff?
Well, you know, I think he's willing to gamble, especially if the crowd gets into the game and they're not playing well. He gets influenced, I think, a lot sometimes from the crowd. I think he will gamble. I really believe he will. Especially if it's short yardage, and I think sometimes it can hurt you as well as help you. I don't know. I can't predict that. I think it's where you are in the field, the game situation. There's certain time you've got to make this drive. You've got to get points. You're not going to win the football game, so you're going to go for it, even if it's no matter what the yardage is. But you got to get a first down and you got to get a score. So it's hard to say. I think the game dictates what you are as far as a gambler or a punting guy or whatever it is. I think the game dictates that as far as the time on the clock and everything else. So, you know, good head coaches use the clock and know exactly where they are, and they know how much time they have left to get the number of points or hold on to the ball, or we got to hold the ball because the defense can't stop the offense, so we got to go for it here anyway, because if we don't, the offense is going to score on us and we're going to lose anyway. So, you know, you've got to look at the game and analyze it that way, and then you make your decisions.
Yeah. All right, Coach. Well, good stuff. We have some positive news to discuss, which is always great. We don't only get that all the time. So, good. You know, hopefully things are going in the right direction. And I'm looking forward to what comes over the next couple of weeks and see what really starts to open up. Some schools are going to start as early as June 1st. So by the next time we have a school, you know, the next time we have a show, we'll probably be able to talk about some schools being able to start their workouts. And for the Pac-12, it'll be a couple more weeks, but maybe USC starts June 15th, or maybe they wait a little longer. We'll wait and see. We don't know at this point, but the option is there. And I'm excited that we at least have some of these options.
I agree. If I'm going to bet on it, they're going to start June 15th, okay?
Yeah.
They're excited. The kids want to come back. I know the coaches are excited. The fans are excited. I think everybody's going to start June 15th. Why would I start later if I have an opportunity to start June 15th that I didn't have a spring program?
Yeah.
I would get after it right away, you know, unless your administrators won't. And you know how administrations are at UCLA. They might not let them start till September.
Yeah. All right, well, that's the Coach Harvey Hyde.
I don't mean to be a smartass on that, but, you know.
Go ahead. Be a smartass all you want, Coach. I don't mind. Well, hope everyone had a great Memorial Day weekend. I know it's Wednesday now, so hopefully you recovered. I feel better. It was a long weekend, but we're rolling along now. Hope everyone had a good time. We actually, if you get this on Wednesday, if you're listening to it on Wednesday, we're doing a special all across the 24/7 Sports Network, especially at uscfootball.com. It's our free VIP day. So if you want to read any of our VIP content or read the post on the Peristyle, which is our premium message board, it's free all day Wednesday. So check that out. And if you do want to sign up, it's 75% off for the next 2 days. So I believe till Friday. I need to double check for sure. But yeah, so this is a crazy deal right now. They're doing quarantine deal type of deal. So free VIP on Wednesday. And if you haven't signed up yet, it's like $2 a month or something for a year. Just go check it out. It's great. It's a great deal. 75% off. I don't know why they're doing that. I don't know. I don't think they'll ever do that again, but 75% off is crazy. So make sure you go check that out. That is the coach. I'm Ryan. Thanks for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by uscfootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.
On May 23rd...
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil, returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.